So with that, we'll take up item 10, consider and take possible action to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to execute an agreement with Sagatech Solutions, LLC to provide pension administration system software, implementation, hosting, and support services in an amount not to exceed $13 million. Gail, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Board Chair. I am pleased to provide to the board a recommendation to go forward with Sagatech Solutions to provide a pension administration system for Sisera. I wanted to provide some background on this item. Back in end of July of last year, there was an RFP that was issued with proposals due the beginning of October. We received six proposals. The oversight team narrowed it down to four proposers, and then the four proposers provided demos of their systems the beginning part of November. The oversight team and myself reviewed the demos. We had some good conversations with the four finalists, and there was further discussion, and from that we have the finalist Sagatech, which is going to be before you today. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about this new pension system that that we're going to be talking a lot about in the future. But to give you a little background on the current system, we contracted back in 2006 with TierPass for our current solution. We started running retiree payroll from that system in I think it was the end of 2008. And so we've been on that system ever since. One of the nice features of having a lot of time pass between now and then is that technology has moved quite a bit and that we're able to have much more interconnectedness in our different areas across Sisera and the way that the operations are going to work going forward with a new solution. This new solution is going to link our processes together in different ways that we currently don't have. You know, we have a standalone pension system that we run reports from, that we run data from, that we do different things through, but there's not connected pieces to directly connected pieces to say our general ledger and accounting, or you know what happens in different areas in the organization. And so, one of the greatest things about having a new system and having new technology is being able to reevaluate the processes and practices that we have in place now, and revamp them so that we have greater efficiencies and effectiveness. The end result is really going to be seen, I think, internally, in the way that we're doing things, but also for our members. I think that we're really going to be able to increase the communication that we have with the members and, you know, really enhance the member experience versus compared to what we're able to do now. There's a number of ways where that's going to be enabled. One of the ways, which you'll see in a little bit here when Sagatech does a product demo for you, but there will be a member portal where members can log in. They can gain access to different information readily and easily. And then as well, there'll be an employer portal. So the contribution and demographic information that we receive from employers, it'll funnel through that portal, which will kind of change the ways that we work with that data internally as well. So, with that, you may remember it a little while back. Siegel was hired to assist Sisera as an external oversight project manager. The internal Sisera project manager for this project is Jasmine Lee, who's our member services manager. She's also with us today. And on the Siegel side, we've been working with Chris Fikes and Sue Ziegler. And at this point, I'm going to, unless there's other questions from the board, I wanted to turn it over to Siegel to talk a little bit more about their involvement in this project. But before we get to that, does anyone have any questions? Okay. So, all right. Hi, Chris. Looks like we have Chris Fikes. So go ahead.
Would you like me to share the presentation or just talk at a high level, Gail, just in the interest of time?
I think you can do both.
Okay. I will share my screen and do that. And I will,
maybe point out the summary level items on the slides.
Absolutely. All right. Can everybody see the first page of the Siegel's board update? Perfect. Thank you. So good afternoon, everybody. Again, thanks for this opportunity. As Gail mentioned, our last update was probably back in November. We provided an update to the board about the modernization project, but a lot's happened since November, as Gail eloquently just explained. So, you know, our activities for stage one were to help with this modernization project, assist with defining requirements, developing the RFP, helping through that process, which resulted in a recommended vendor, Sagitech, and that's why we're here today. Looking at this screen here, you know, we envisioned this project to occur from November of 2019 through September. Well, we had a couple of hiccups along the way. You know, there was two procurements we had to conduct. COVID happened, which kind of stopped some of the throughput and the ability to get through the project as fast as we originally envisioned. But the good news was, is by the end of the year, back in December, we had made it through all of these milestones listed on the screen, and we're at the point of having a recommended vendor that we presented to Gail with the evaluation team. So what's happened since December? Well, obviously there were some contract negotiations that occurred from December through March. A lot of progress was made on those, and we're at that point of getting close to sign the contract, obviously pending board approval today. So the next question you're probably asking is that last bullet is, well, when will the actual implementation start? We'll assume everything goes through okay today and the contract gets signed. The plan is to start the project by the end of this month, like April 26th, to kick off the project and get started. As Gail mentioned, these were kind of the key dates on the procurement timeline. Being Siegel and doing this work before, I think the value is, you know, when you issued your RFP, you did get a lot of response from the marketplace, which is great. There was a competitive procurement. You followed a proven approach. You had a good myriad of vendors with good approaches and solutions. You really narrowed it down to the top four, and you've obviously selected the finalist, who is, you know, one of the industry leaders in this market. So I think this is a good point and a good segue. So I'm happy to answer any questions about what we've done today to get here, but I know we've got several representatives from Sagitech that are on the call today, that they can tell you about their company, their people, their approach, and obviously show us all their product. Any questions about the history of what we did for stage one of the project? Okay, if it's okay, Gail, should I just go ahead and turn it over to Sagitech and Jeff?
Sure.
Perfect. I'm going to stop sharing my screen if they need to take control. And I'll obviously be happy to answer any questions as we go through, if there's any questions of Siegel.
Good morning. This is Jeff Adair with Sagitech, and I'm going to ask one of my colleagues, Casey, to share his screen for us. And then we'll go through the slides very methodically, pointing out exactly which number we're on for anyone who may be on the phone and can't follow the version online. So, Casey, if you go to slide two, please. Thank you. So I'm Jeff Adair, and I'm the Director of Business Development for Sagitech's pension product. I'm really the author of the proposal and the coordinator of the sales work. And I'll talk a good bit today about the company, but the people you're really going to work with are, for the most part, the people who are also on this slide and who are not me. They're really our delivery team. They're the ones who are going to get your system in and make it work. And so I've asked each one of them to briefly introduce themselves in turn and then tell you just a little bit about their background. And so if I may, I'd like to start with Ed Myers, who would be your account manager. Ed?
Hello, Are you there, Ed?
Ed?
Well, there we go. Sorry. My name is Ed Myers. I have over 30 years of pension experience. I started with the Taft-Hartley Fund, worked there for over 20 years. And then after that, I became a consultant with a consulting firm as a project manager and worked on about 8 state retirement systems. From there, I've been with Sagitec for 2 years. My current role at Sagitec is the account executive. So as account executive, I'm responsible for actively and consistently supporting all the efforts to simplify and enhance the customer experience. I stay connected with the project delivery teams to ensure and provide an outside view on the project to help streamline any communication challenge that may exist. I establish and maintain a positive and trusted relationship. And I oversee the delivery schedule to make certain that deadlines are met. I currently oversee 10 customers at Sagitec. I attend meetings throughout the implementations. I schedule monthly meetings with the IT director, executive director, deputy, depending who I'll meet there, to review progress, discuss any concerns, and bring team members to the meeting when situations arise. I report directly to a managing director, which is Jeff Bryce. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Sriram? Oh, I'm sorry, Ed.
Hi, this is Sriram Ramanujam. I've been part of Sagitec PMO, and I will be the CSERA project manager for this project. I have like about over 20 years of experience in managing multiple pension administration applications for various state and local retirement systems in the past. And I will be the primary project manager for the implementing the CSERA project here today.
Thanks, Ruru. Casey?
Hi, I'm Srinivas Koluru, also known as Casey. I am the deputy project manager here. I'll be assisting Ed Myers and Sriram in the day-to-day project management activities. I have over 22 years of experience in implementing end-to-end technology solutions for various public sector retirement systems.
Thanks, Casey. John?
Hey, good afternoon. My name is John Finnegan. I'm the lead analyst or the functional manager. I actually live just down the road in Sacramento, so it's good to be working in California again, and especially when the client is this close. This is the second project that I've done the functional management of. The last 5.5 years, I was working at CalSTRS. I've done other work in the past with CalPERS and a number of other clients outside of California.
Thanks, John. And Bjorn?
Right. Can everyone hear me okay? My name is Bjorn Larson. I'm the director for pension products in Sagitec. I've been doing pension my entire career, 21 years now. I've been working on that. 16 of those years have been with Sagitec. And if I look back on my very first project in Kansas, I have experience working with Chris Fikes. So good to see you again, Chris. It's been a couple of days. Other people on the team that I work with here, Srinivas Koluru, he also worked on a project with us back in Kansas. And John Finnegan and I worked together on a project in Missouri and also in California on the project out in there. So the one thing that we have is a really deep experience that goes back a long time. And over that time, you kind of establish a camaraderie with each other and really learn how to lean on each other. And I want to give you a little background on my role. So in the time that I've been with Sagitec, I've been building NeoSpin from the ground up. So in the 16 years and the number of clients that we've worked with, we've looked at what are the leading practices for how to build a pension solution the right way to give our clients the right features at the right time. And that's what we've been working on enhancing and evolving over the years. And my role as the pension director in products is to support all of our delivery team. So I'll be working very closely with the team to make sure that when they take a new module under development, they're getting all of the right information at the right time to deliver a solution that will meet all of your business needs. All right, Jeff, back to you.
Sure. Okay.
If I could ask, I'm sorry, could I ask a quick question of Neil, of Bjorn?
Yes, absolutely.
You may have answered the question, but I was going to ask whether or not NeoSpin is a proprietary piece of software, or is that a bolt-on modified piece of software that moves into this edge tech solution?
No, this is a proprietary software that we have built from the ground up using our Sagitech Studio and our framework that our developers have created over the years. So this is an entirely in-house built solution that I've been an architect of from day one.
Okay. The first thing I thought of when I saw the name was it sounds like the latest update you get from the White House press secretary.
It is today's
new spin.
Yeah, it is actually an anagram. Those letters can spell pension, and that's where the name kind of came from. And the Neo is kind of stuck, and it's been attached to several other things that we do along the way.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Okay. Are there any more questions? If not, we'll go to slide 3.
And Jeff, can you provide a little bit of your background as well?
Yeah, I have been in the pension business since 1995. I've worked at several companies, including a couple of our competitors now, and I've worked at Sagitech cumulatively for 7 years. And I've managed projects in a number of states and some local funds. And that's kind of my story, I guess. Like Bjorn and others, really everyone pretty much on this call from Sagitech, this has become what I do. You know, pension systems is the industry that, you know, within IT that we have all specialized in. It's a little bit like law. There's, for example, lots of lawyers and you know, some specialize in estates or trust work, and some people do criminal law. You know, in IT, you know, you kind of carve out an industry and you develop an expertise in that business functionality. And that's what I've done along with, you know, Bjorn and Sriram and Casey as well. Okay. If you will, we'll go on to slide 3. So this is a very high level overview about the company. The company was started by 6 partners. And the founders have all had jobs, and all but one who's now retired do have jobs. They work here every day. We're pretty independent in terms of the ownership and kind of proudly so. We're very proud that we've built the business over the years with internal money, without a lot of outside funding. We don't have a lot of debt. We don't have any debt that's convertible to equity. We don't have any venture capital. You know, this was originally a company that was bootstrapped up out of the savings accounts of the founders. And it gives us a lot of independence to make really the best decisions for our clients without pressures from third parties who are, you know, may have different objectives. And so the partners have been very proud of what they've done and what they've built. And they really started on trying to build not just the best pension system, but really one of the most long lasting, you know, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but avoiding functional obsolescence and technical obsolescence was really one of the very key items that we founded the company on. And building a system that would stand the test of time without having to be rebuilt was very important to them. And we'll show you how we do that later, but that was really the driving force. The partners worked, most of them worked for what was then Bearing Point in their retirement practice and had been leaders there. And what they had seen is systems that they just thought they could do better than. And so they set out to do that. And over the years, you know, they've grown. I joined in 2015, and I think that year we did about $1.5 million of revenue. And, you know, you can see below we've had we're getting close to $100 million in revenue now on fairly steady, consistent growth year over year. I'll go on to slide 4 unless there's questions. A little bit more about the company generally. You can see where, if you look at where our people are clustered, they're largely around where people have lived or where we have done projects. So our first project was in Topeka. We've done three systems for state funds in Missouri. We've worked in Colorado, was really our second big client with the Fire and Police Pension Fund.
From there, we've developed offices really across the globe, but principally in India. And we're expanding more into Canada right now. We've actually opened a second office in Toronto that's not on this slide yet. But if you look in the lower right-hand corner of the slide, you can see that along with our revenue, our staff growth has been fairly consistent. The ratio of U.S. staff to offshore staff has been fairly stable. And if you look on the left part of the graphic, what you'll see is that, you know, the types of jobs that we do. You know, most people build software. We have 550 people who are just really making customizations and testing and supporting in production systems that we have built in the past. That's what most people do. Our overhead's pretty low. We don't have, if you look at what our finance and administration staff is, it's relatively small. We really spend our money in the field working on projects that serve our clients.
So if I could ask another question.
Sure.
I infer from this that virtually 100% of your coding is being done in India. Is that right?
I would say that's pretty close. Yeah, not quite 100, but most of it for sure.
Yeah, yep. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, slide 5, please. Okay, I'm not going to read. We have 3 slides that talk about our 27 clients, and I'm going to ask Casey if he'll just page through them and leave them on there for a few seconds. But they give you a sense of the flavor of where we've been, and then I'll have a summary slide on slide 8 that will show us, that they'll kind of tell us about the characteristics of these customers. Okay, Casey, next. And 8, please. So you would be our 28th NeoSpin pension administration client. And we have done them from sizes ranging for as large as CalSTRS, and there are 750,000 members, and as small as the St. Paul Teacher System in Minnesota, which has less than 7,000 members. So our system's been able to scale up very well to large clients. It's also flexible enough that we've been able to reach relatively small clients. And that's really one of the things that the system was built for. It was never built for a single client or a single type of audience. We really wanted to be able to reach pension funds of all sizes. And I think we've done pretty well with that. We have 4 clients in California. We have 4 international clients now. And thing about our clients that I think we're most proud of, and this will speak to some of the things we'll talk about later and what we talked about previously with regard to the longevity of the system, is no client has ever replaced our solution. So Bjorn was talking about his experience when he joined the company at Kansas PERS. Kansas PERS is still a customer of ours. In fact, just last week, they committed to making a rather large investment in rebuilding some of their functionality with us, and we're very excited to still be helping them. But we believe the reason they stay with us has to do with 2 things. One is the technical platform that simply allows them to do that in a cost-effective manner. And then 2, we're pretty loyal to them, and that our commitment to them and helping them succeed year over year with upgrades and as things change have really been valuable to them. And we believe the fact that they haven't left us is a pretty good reflection of that. Okay. This is our people. So Ed and Sriram and Casey and John have all introduced themselves to you. If you look at the lower half of the graph, what you'll see is people with fairly long tenures of pension administration experience. We're very proud of that. I'm not sure the names necessarily mean a lot to you, but I think the right column with the experience perhaps does. And if you'll go to slide 10, I can kind of summarize where those people are. We've named 11 people in the contract as key resources. That means those people are committed to you contractually. And of those people, they have about 14 years on average of pension administration experience. And then past that, there's on average across the project about 22 full-time equivalent staff
that would be working on the development of the system. So the 11 you see there, and then on average about 11, which includes developers, testers, people work on training, other business analysts. And that's, I'm sorry, Casey, will you back up one, please? Sorry about that. Thank you. Are there any questions about just the staff and the company? I'm about to kind of transition into talking a little bit more about the functionality and, you know, the system itself, how it's architected, and the discussion is slightly more technical. Okay. If there's no questions, we'll go on to 11. So this slide talks about how our system is built. And I hope I'm a good person to talk to you about this because I'm not a really technical person. So I'm going to give you an example that I believe you can easily attach to. So our system is built on three basic layers. If you look at the bottom layer, the blue layer, this is some of the basic services that we get from Microsoft. So they have their .NET development platform, and that's what we build everything upon. And what we build is these engines. And I'm going to pick on the batch engine and take you up the chain here or up the pyramid with an example around this batch engine. So what we do with the components that we buy from Microsoft and our license is we build a batch engine. And what that does is it understands how to create print output, how to send it to a printer, how to send it to a PDF file, how to send it to a file directory or other places. And all of that is code that we build, and that kind of sits at the very bottom as our base platform. And we don't modify that a lot. It's not the client code. It's something that we license to you. When we get to the gray area, the middle row or of these boxes, what you find is what we call the Sagitech Enterprise Management Services. And so once we have an engine that knows how to deal with batch reports, what we can do is we can create what we call services. And services are just computer programs, that they do discrete functions. So they may do routing, they may do print services, that type of thing. So on top of the engine, we have something that's a little more fine-grained, and we build those very specifically to support things that we know pension systems do. Once we get to the orange layer, what we call the Neospend Benefit Services, these are the basic functions that we know that all funds utilize. I'm sorry, Jerry, did you have a question?
No, I'm sorry. I forgot to.
Okay. Oh, I thought that you might have had your hand raised. I beg your pardon.
You probably just thought it was time to hear from me. It's really not true.
Okay. I'll keep going. So when we get to the, orange layer, these are the types of things that all pension systems do, but each of them do them differently. So you can consider this your custom code. So until now, we're doing things in the blue boxes and the gray boxes that are sort of core foundation components. And when we get to the orange row, now we're talking about things that just pension funds do, right? Everybody, like banks, do batch processing, right? They send you statements and whatnot. But when we get to the orange box, this is the stuff that you do. And this is where most of the work goes in, right? This is the customizations. And this is the code that's very specific to you. So when we get there, if we use this batch example again, let's talk about doing your member statements at the end of the year. So we have a batch service, and we can create media output from that. So what we'll do to do that is we'll use perhaps calculations. We might want to show on that statement one of your a sample retirement application. So with your annual statement, we often say, here's what you're eligible for, right? We might also look at the withdrawals and say, we also know that you have withdrawn service from a prior employer that you're eligible to buy. And if you did, you could retire earlier and increase your benefit. So we would use all of these things on top of these, all of these orange boxes on top of the gray box to do specific functions for you. And then the orange box, when we get down to calculations, that's where people like John come in. And what John does is he has to understand the very detailed rules of, you know, how you calculate pensionable service, how you apply, you know, your final average salary to it, how, you know, if you do reductions, all of those things that, that are very specific to your policy are all done there. And then finally, there's this, this kind of box up at the top called tailored services or tailored extensions. And what a tailored extension would be is something unique that only Contra Costa does and no one else, or perhaps not too many other people. So this would be something unique to you. So if we use this example here of these sending these annual statements out, perhaps you want to use, say, Twilio's messaging service. And you want Twilio to send someone a text message that says, hey, your annual statement has been printed and you can go out to your member account and view that statement. So we would build that as a custom feature and extend your system that way to something that's very unique to you. And so when you take these three layers together, the reason our systems last longer than most of our competitors is when you change any one of these colored layers, you don't affect the layers above or below them. And so that they work well together over time. And in that way, you're not forced to upgrade your system to some new generation that would cause you to really start over, which is what we see a lot. We see a lot of vendors, you may get in with them and 7 or 8 years later, they say, well, you need an upgrade. And they say, well, how much is the upgrade? And the upgrade really winds up costing as much as the original solution, because it's not really an upgrade. They're really sort of rebuilding the thing from the bottom up. And we believe that going back, for example, to the Kansas example, the test of time for us has been that our customers have been able to stay with us because we haven't forced them into these sort of expensive upgrades, because something we did kept them from being technically relevant at the time. So anyway, that's kind of the, in a nutshell, kind of how our architecture works without giving you any kind of, you know, technical talk. Are there any questions before I move on? Okay, 12, please, Casey. All right, so I talked about the fact that we're built on our Sagitech framework and each layer is independent. I'd also like to talk about the research and development center. So you'll pay a fee, we call it platform maintenance, every year. And people want to know what they get for that fee. Well, what they get is those blue and gray boxes always being updated so that 5 years from now, if someone comes out with a new type of integrating system, like a new content management service, and you would like to swap out the system that you have for that, you'll be able to do that. And that's one of the key features is that ability to stay technically relevant over time. And we have about 100 resources that work in that research and development center. Bjorn manages a good piece of that. And they spend a lot of time every year just understanding where technology is going, how to best deploy it generally. And then what I think we're really good at is how do you deploy it specifically to the pension administration industry. Finally, some other things that we get that are not part of the application code. One of them is our security. We think we have a superb security solution, and it's based on a standard called FedRAMP. You may not be familiar with it, but it's something that was originally developed by the Department of Defense, and it is a security structure that really goes above and beyond what a lot of other vendors are doing right now. Finally, we host our solution on the Microsoft Azure Cloud, and we're happy to be a partner with a gold partner with Microsoft, and we work very closely with them. And their solution and the FedRAMP security protocols that we use really give us a lot of confidence in the security of your solution over time. Are there any questions on that before I go to 13?
Question to the extent you can comfortably answer it in a public setting. Have any of your other systems experienced any security breaches?
Knows the answer. We haven't had, you know, anyone who's really gotten through, if you will, data loss, that type of thing. No.
Yeah, it's an ongoing concern, as you can imagine.
Oh, absolutely.
It's public system. So, okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So there's no issue with respect to ransomware?
Well, there's nothing that would say we're completely invulnerable to it, right? I mean, everybody has a certain level of vulnerability, but what we do is we adopt the most rigid standard on the market. So we're giving you every protection that we think we can. And we also update that on a routine basis too. So, you know, again, back to, you know, what do you get for the platform maintenance fee? Well, you get releases, and those releases always include the latest security patches and improvements to whatever we're getting from, you know, security vendors. And we use a number of them. So we don't just for example, we do intrusion prevention, but we also do proactive intrusion detection so that we can find these things, you know, in real time while they're happening and not after we've had a loss. So we couldn't make a blanket guarantee that we're bulletproof. No one is, but we certainly could make the claim that we do as much as anybody could possibly do to help protect you. And we invest in, you know, staying on top of that really month over month. Okay, 13. So one of the key features of the system is the ability to upgrade at low and predictable costs. So I've talked a few times already about our platform maintenance fees. And what that means is that, you know, 10 years from now, 5 years, as long as you're with us, you know what those fees are going to be, and you know you're always going to get our latest and best piece of our solution. So with some other vendors, you kind of get into it, and like I said before, you get out some years out, and they say, well, we have to upgrade, and then we start talking about the cost. And I think what we're proud of is our costs are pretty transparent. So we make a commitment to keep you up to date, and we give you a 5 or 10 year contract, or as long as you want to, you know, commit to us. And while you have that, we're committed to making sure that you have the most state-of-the-art solution that we can provide. Again, I think we have in the public pension industry, I don't think anyone has gone quite as far as we have in terms of what they've done and are willing to do to secure your system. We host from a market leader in Microsoft. Really, there's only two premier hosting companies in the U.S. Really, it's Amazon through AWS or Microsoft through Azure. We do have a couple of our smaller clients that have gone on to AWS, but we're comfortable with Microsoft. We think their solution offers us the ability to do some things more efficiently. And what others are still doing in some cases are what we call rented data centers. And so what you do with that is you get to put your computers in their house, so to speak. And what they do is they physically secure the house. They have backup generation and things that are like that, but they don't give you a whole lot of logical help on securing the application from things like intrusion. And that's something that we get more from Microsoft and some of the big players. Plus our ability to stream out the data to back it up is much better, and our ability to recover if we had to go to a failover in a disaster situation is much more rapid and productive using one of these bigger solutions. Finally, the last thing point I wanted to make is our post-implementation support. So a lot of vendors take their post-implementation support and they throw it over to a new team. So you'll work with the leadership team we've already introduced you to, and a bunch of other people for the next 3 years. And then you're going to go into warranty, and then you're going to go into a support phase. And when you do that, you'll still have a subset of the people who built the application here with you. What a lot of other providers do is they throw you over to the support group, And that's a whole new group. It's new relationships, new communication patterns. And even for that group, they have to learn the nuances or the subtle things that are different about Contra Costa. And we think there's a certain inefficiency in that. And so we like this model that leaves you with this group. In fact, I keep going back to the Kansas model because it has such long legs. But we do have one of the leaders on that group that has been there since we went there in 2004, and he's still there helping them out. He spent the life of the company and the life of his career, 17 years at Kansas PERS. And so I don't know if you stayed with us 17 years, if we'll really have that same person there that long, but we're going to use people that built your system to maintain your system. And then if anybody rolls out through whatever type of attrition that we have, we'll replace them with the best people that we can offer to back them.
I'm probably dating myself badly, but in my former IT days, what responsibility I did have, there was a really good natured rivalry amongst the users in my organization with Apple and Microsoft. And I, you know, the Apple people used to say, in Apple, it's plug and play. With Microsoft, it's plug and pray. So I wonder to what extent Microsoft has actually achieved now this aspirational goal of being plug and play.
Well, I guess I would say that Microsoft was probably never quite that bad and Apple was never probably quite that good. I think Microsoft has done a lot for us over the years with their .NET platform and, you know, the solutions that we've been able to interface with over time. We've never had problems with that. That's not been an issue. I would say that I worked with Microsoft solutions when I first started about 25 years ago. And we saw a lot of the vendors that kind of came in and I think they didn't know who they wanted to partner with it in a ongoing basis. And a lot of those companies failed. But I think now Microsoft also is sort of the de facto standard, you know, the way you have, you can write apps, right, for your iPhone. And it's very clear as to what you have to do to make those work. I think Microsoft's done a really good job of helping vendors understand what it takes to integrate with them. And so we don't really have any particular problems with the products that we have. For example, we've gone from place to place, and occasionally we'll get someone who wants to maintain an interfacing system that they already have. And we really have never been able to say, we can't get you there.
And I just wanted to say, for post-implementation support, I'm never going to go away. So I'm going to be there for, you know, as long as I can be there. So,
yeah. Okay, 14. Okay, so Bjorn is going to take you through a little test drive here. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about all of these next few slides. But one of the things we wanted to point out to you is how your work is tracked, right? So you can... we know and we have the ability to quickly find what's going on in your system at a user level. You can watch people for productivity reasons. If you want to just see, you know, how much work they're moving along, you can look at them if you have suspicions of fraud. There's nothing that gets changed in our system that you can't search. So if, for example, David, if you were using the system and someone wanted to know what you were up to, we could find your whole day. We can know what you changed, what it looked like before, what it looked like after. We can report that out. We can list it on a screen. We have the ability to keep track of everything that happens. So, you know, if you ever have to backtrack into something for some reason, that's all there. We can integrate with your general ledger system quite easily. We've integrated with a number of them over the years. It's a fairly straightforward interfacing process. It tends to take summary-less records to your general ledger. So if any of you are accountants, what you see in our system is effectively your subledger. So you would get, for example, on your payroll, you might just get a single debit and a single credit, you know, between cash and one of your reserve accounts. But here, if you want to know each of the individual payments, you can look them up and kind of, you know, tool through them that way. You can generate annual benefit statements. We also have this secure member portal. Bjorn's going to show you a little bit of the portal, but you can do calculations. You can log on to your personal account. You can do what-if scenarios. You can do projections with assumptions on salary growth and whatnot. If you go to 15, I have a few more of these I want to just kind of highlight real quickly. You can run unlimited calculations. I think that's another thing we find very powerful. We can track your work. You know, work comes in any number of manners, through the phone, through the mail, through your online system. We have a method of teeing it up that can be customized, whether you give it to people round robin or whether you give certain cases to certain people. You can reassign work. Those are all things Bjorn will show you. We have a contact management function so that when people call, we can log those calls. We can understand the history. You know, if you have, you know, sometimes you have your frequent flyers who call a lot. You can have quite a history of transactions with them. If someone calls and, you know, you can't get something complete and they call back, you can re-review that and sort of get your starting point. We have death reporting where we can do tracking on individuals who have died by getting data back from the death reporting services. We can work with any of the commercial services that are out there. They're probably, there used to really just be a couple. There are three or four now that are pretty legit that you may work with. We take those files and we can let you know when, you know, people are deceased so that if they're still on the payroll, you can address that. 16, please. Employer reporting, I understand this will be something a bit new for you. Your employers can go to a portal, which is just an online application, and they will deposit their file there and they will process it themselves. And so what you find a lot of systems is older systems is the errors all come into the organization and it's your problem to try to keep them out. What this does is it puts that data back on the reporting employer and makes them kind of clean their data up before they post it into your system. And you find that over time, things get a lot better. You know, at first, your employers may struggle with that. You may get some resistance to it. But once they get the hang of it, it works pretty well. And you get better data, you get more accurate reporting. And, you know, then that funnels through to your membership, right? So when they want to retire, you can start to rely on the data that's in there about them, and you don't have to go back and spend so much time editing it or reviewing it or auditing it before you can feel confident that you're giving them an accurate benefit. We fully integrate with your imaging system. So we're going to bring in a FileNet, and FileNet is a product that's now owned by IBM. It's what they call a content management system. So you can scan documents. You can send documents out with barcodes on them so that when they come back, they can be associated with a process. So if you're halfway through something and you need a signed form, you can send that out to them with the barcode. When you come back, it runs through the scanner. The barcode says, oh, this is Todd's application. I recognize that. Now I can restart that process because he's given me that piece of information that I need. So we also have disability claims that use case management so that, again, there are a lot of steps, of course, in disability claims. You have third parties, you know, physicians and whatnot that have to be involved. And being able to track that can be very cumbersome, but we have, you know, work processes that allow us to track that, be able to tell people within the organization and the applicants where they are in that process. And then we have online meeting and seminar scheduling and registration. So when people want to see a counselor, they don't have to call and the counselor doesn't have to open up their own calendar and look through, you know, when can I get you in? We can actually assign people's Outlook calendars into our solution and they get sort of merged together. And then you can schedule people that way. So your counselors become a little more efficient because they don't spend as much time scheduling the meetings, they spend their time having the meetings. And we can do the same thing with seminar registrations and that too. So we can set up a seminar if you're going to have a pre-retirement seminar for someone or some group. You can put a limit of seats in it, and they can online register for that as well. Can we go to 17, please? Okay.
Can we take a brief yeah. break before you move into that?
Yes.
In all the years I heard presentations, I never, ever, ever once heard a presentation from an outside vendor that wasn't, we can do that. We can do it, no problem. Yeah. We can install it. We've never had a problem with anybody else. And then later on, they come back and say, we've never quite had a client like you. So it kind of reminds me of that old FedEx commercial, which I thought was great, where the guy's on the phone says, we can do that. We can do that. Yeah, we can do that. And then he hangs up and says, how are we going to do that?
Yeah.
Some people, you know, can learn, organizations can learn from problems. And I'm not looking for problems, but without mentioning any clients, can you give us an example of a surprise that you came up with or discovered in one of your installations that really was a tough challenge for you and more than you expected?
You know, I don't want to, I'm going to ask Bjorn perhaps if he can help me. Bjorn works with more of the projects than I do, right? So I hate to put you on the spot, Bjorn. Are you there? Could you?
Yeah, no, I'm always here, Jeff. Right. Yeah, no. So Jerry, to address your question, right? I would say the single biggest challenge that we encounter, and this is across any of our clients, are when legislative changes come in, right? We understand that the legislation is going to happen. It's an inevitability. And when it comes to introducing, say, a new tier to a plan where you have new eligibility rules, you have a new population that's going to be subject to those eligibility rules, new multipliers, new formulas, new ways that the benefits need to be calculated. And then particularly when you have people that have service credit and salary in previous tiers and they are now going to be participating in that new tier and how to share that information across the tiers, that's always where it starts to become particularly complicated. And, you know, I will say, right, we can do that. We can build that because I have and we have done that exact thing. It does take time. I think we implemented a brand new tier for that project in Kansas, the CAPERS, Kansas Public Employee Retirement System, in I think a little over 6 months it took us to implement it from beginning to end. But this is entirely new legislation, determining who the eligible population is for that, making sure that they're getting the right benefit at the right time, and all of those types of things come into play. So anytime you add things like that, and particularly when it comes to something that's subject to legislation, so if, for example, in California, you have to now start saying, we have to provide insurance benefits for our staff and for our membership, how are you going to do that, right? Then we would have to go through the entire process of that, identifying what are the requirements, how do we implement those things for you? How do we make sure that it's meeting your requirements when it goes live? And then, you know, when the rubber hits the road and you start to release that, how do you troubleshoot the issues as they come up? So those things are always a challenge. And I think the new tier introduction is always the biggest one.
I can see legislative changes. Could you take just a couple of minutes to talk about how you help clients keep a corral around their requirements, which seems to be one of the biggest problems with virtually any client is requirements slipping.
Yeah, can we ask John to
yeah, I was gonna okay. address that yeah. very same thing. Yes,
that's John's area. So John, can you help us?
Yeah, I could. I heard the word requirement. My ears pricked up.
I think so, that was sweat running down your back.
That's most days. So, so let me just my approach to requirements is it protects us and it protects you. And I approach that with an understanding that those are dual responsibilities that I have. And so we spend a lot of time at the very beginning of a project. Well, right now, I think it's 5 to 6 weeks that we'll be going over every single requirement from the RFP and try to fully elaborate exactly what it means. It's not something that we're going to provide our perspective on. It's primarily asking the CSERA folks to describe what they meant when they asked for that particular requirement, try to box it in so that we know the entire scope and so we're not questioning it later on, making sure that we actually have the functionality to be able to do that. Because the majority of requirements are set aside for you to receive 5 or 10 bids, right? The reality is they need to be narrower and narrowed down to be able to build a system. And so that's the first thing that we'll start focusing on with them. As we come out of those requirements, That'll be the driver for everything else that we identify that we'll be implementing based on our product, or if the product doesn't fit that particular requirement, we agree on the scope, then those will be the configurations and customizations that we
Because I've never approach. I've never seen a more certain project killer than scope creep, where the scope of a project used to be a year, then it becomes 2 years, then it becomes 3 years, and then nobody can even remember who initiated the project because they're all gone. So it's just, you've got to have reachable timeframes, reachable deliverables, and you've got to be able to say to a client at some point, we have to freeze those specs.
And that is part of our process. But it's not something that we do on our own. It's something that we work with the client on. I will tell you that working with a large client like CalSTRS, we would have sessions that were bigger than the entire organization at CICERA with over 60 people in a room. It made it as a difficult piece, but...
I'm very sorry.
No, it's I've got a lot of good friends that are still at CalSTRS that I respect because they were... very focused on what they did. But I will tell you that once we worked through how we would work together, and that took a couple of years where we had to make a, we had to stop. We were working for another prime and we were doing the implementation of the product. But once we learned how to work together, I can tell you that we were within small percentages of meeting all of our timelines on large design aspects. And part of that is because we had a methodology that you'll see here. We work closely with them. And, you know, we're not trying to browbeat any of our clients. We need to work together with them to be able to get to the point that we're all successful. And we'll continue that at CICERA.
Okay, thanks. I'll let you get back on track. It's just a, from bitter experience, it's something I'm very concerned about because it can slide away from you real fast. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Jeff, if I can add to like what John had said, you know, again, John said it really clear, right? Like, you know, he's been doing this like day in, day out, you know, and then as a PM, like, you know, I also like work with the requirements team. Our like first focus is going to be, so what we are bringing to the table is like, you know, not just the bodies, right? The industry knowledge, the industry expertise. As Jeff was talking about, none of our clients like never been like replaced our system, right? So that's the trust that like we are bringing into the table, you know, that that we know the industry very well, right? So a lot of times I hear from the users, you know, they will define the requirements and then they will ask us like, you know, based on our expertise, like working with multiple clients, you know, how like this requirement can be like, you know, best implemented for us. So they just take us, you know, ask us to like give our expertise, like, you know, from working from various different clients, right? So our focus is like building that trust with the users and then like work with them and you know, not just like understand the requirements and then like, you know, show them like how best like we could implement those requirements for them. So that's like, you know, another, you know, skills that like our people will be bringing to CICERA.
Well, okay. Jerry, your question kind of falls to kind of into where we're going, right? So this is a diagram that, that really kind of explains the process that we go through. And what John was talking about is we start out with confirming our plans. And we're actually a little bit ahead on that. You know, the contract negotiation took a while. And in that time, we probably did more to share our going in project plan and our expectations of participation from your staff than we normally get to do. And so I think we've got a bit of a leg up on that. But after we get through the basic initiation of setting up an environment to work in and validating the plans, you know, John will go through, you have almost 2,000 requirements that we have to confirm. And some of that confirmation is like really fast. You know, if you tell us that you want last name first and first name last, we don't have to have much conversation about that. Some of them will be a little more vague. And just like anything else, we'll spend, you know, the majority of the time on the minority of the requirements to make sure we understand them. And then we go through this requirements process where we fit this to the system that we already have. And I think that really helps us quite a bit because what we're doing then is we're looking at something that's physical and already there. We can show it to you. And we can say, this is how
we have to adapt it. And I think that that really helps quite a bit because we have a solution that's built. It would do all the functions you need done right now. It just wouldn't do them quite in the way you need them done to run your specific business. And that's where the work gets into this sort of middle section, right? So we'll go through iterations of one third roughly of your functionality at a time. We'll go through three release cycles of elaborating the requirements, defining them to the gap between what we have and what you need, and then building and testing them. And that's kind of how our process works. Again, we're with you. We think that the requirements getting away from us is always one of our just big going in risk, right? It's just a natural risk that you take into every project. And I think we're pretty cognizant of it. We've also worked with your staff already to talk about a decision-making process, a change order process, things that would kind of set some boundaries around things as well. Once we get over to the right, you look at sort of the orange column. When we get into the transition phases, we have a very good training program. We'll have specialists that just do that. They build some really nice material. There's great leave behinds in terms of searchable content, things that you can use to not only train your current staff, but also to onboard staff in the future. And then we'll talk a little bit more in a minute about sort of what happens go live. So I'm not going to dwell on that far right column just yet in the interest of time. But, you know, there's nothing in terms of our process here that's probably not what others do. So I don't think you get like a clear discriminator in terms of the steps that we take. There's just, you know, there's certain things you got to do to get from point A to point B, and we all do it. I think to Sriram's point, our first order of business is to establish a certain level of trust with people and to be able to show them where we're going and why that works, and to bring in these best practices from other places, which I think helps sometimes make decisions. You know, we've seen a lot of clients, and we can come back and, you know, sometimes people are going in a direction that they may not want to go. And it's good to have some insight to say, you know, we've seen people do that before and they regretted it later. And that doesn't mean they always say, okay, we'll do it your way, but it certainly gives us an ability, I think, sort of lead the project in a way that helps you be more successful. And are there any questions about kind of just the general flow of building the system? Go to 18 then.
I just got one quick question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
On Mr. Watson was talking about legislation changes and implementing them into the system. How about smaller changes for individual groups? Is that easier to integrate into the system, or is it possible?
The short answer is probably yes. Can you give me perhaps an example?
Say we have a group, one of the unions negotiates something with the county for a benefit. And how do we get that benefit? Is it room to put that benefit for that individual group into that system?
Yeah. Bjorn, you want to take that one?
So the question is, now you have a union that's negotiated a new CBA where they are eligible to receive a special benefit or to participate in a different benefit program.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a broad item to capture just kind of at a high level, but we do have a number of configuration rules behind the scenes that would allow, here is what eligibility is to participate in this. And then there's a rule in our rules engine. And depending upon the complexity of it, right, if you're talking about just for people that are in this position and we have to add a new column into one of the rules, not a difficult thing. But if you're saying we need to have people that are going to then now go through an open enrollment process, decide if they want to opt in or out of that, then we're going to add another thing to maybe their employer to indicate they're eligible or not and return it back, then it would be a different concept. So depending upon, you know, the complexity of that change, the thing that in over the years that we've really focused on building in the NeoSpin solution is configurability behind the scenes. So an example that we've done for eligibility for benefits, we know over the years we've seen the combination of either the total service credit and your age. So you have to be 50 with 55 years of service. We have the total service, maybe for police officers. I've seen many times 30 and out. Once you get to 30 years of service, you're eligible to retire at any age. Other times there's service plus age. So rule of 80, when you're 50 with 30 years of service, you hit rule of 80 and you're out. And then the other is just an age that once you get to age 65, irrespective of the service, you'll get a benefit, even if it's a very small one. So we built our rule around those parameters for eligibility. And we find that it fits probably 90 plus percent of the requirements that we've seen. So that one is really configurable and really easy. Now, service and how you calculate service, well, that one becomes more difficult. I've seen where it's based on the hours worked. I've seen it based on your contract salary. I've seen it based on the number of days you work in a year. I've seen it if you work a number of days in a quarter. I've seen it if you work a number of hours in a week and a schedule that you have to either work 10, 12, or 15 hours in the course of that week in order to get qualified for it. So then that one becomes a little bit more challenging. So depending upon, we'd have to do a little bit of a deeper dive under the hood to see what your requirement is, and then look at what the structures that we built behind the scenes to accommodate that change would be. But we have built NeoSpin in such a way that I confidently say that 80% of the business requirements that you have will be met by the product out of the box, either through straight turning on a function or through some configuration of that function. Then the remaining 20%, right, it really follows the Pareto principle where you have 20% of the work takes 80% of the time. That's where we spend the bulk of our time working on it. So does that answer your question, Louis?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, yes. Certainly.
Okay. Can we go to slide 18, please? Thank you. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about the schedule. So Bjorn just talked about my first point, really, which is we have a lot of things that we have already in the box that really help us get going. Once we get going, we're going to do a two-phased implementation. So we will do the internal application or the PAS that your staff uses and the employer self-service that will be one piece of rollout. And then we'll do member self-service. And so within a 36-month period, we'll roll out in September of 2023, we would roll out the first piece, the PAS and employer self-service. Then you'd have a little buffer of about 4 months until we got the member self-service online so that your members can get on and start to do things for themselves. And then from there, there's a 3-month period after each of these are in production where we call it sort of the acceptance period, right? So you'll be using the system, but it's not done yet in per se, right? We expect it to be. But this is an evaluation period for your staff. And what this does effectively is if you look at from September 2023 till the time we finish the warranty, that piece is warranted for about 19 months. And that's a good thing for you. It's a really good model to use. Then your self-service would be warranted effectively for 15 months. And then, so after that much time, then you go into a support period where we're helping you every year with fixes. It's really, at that point, it's whatever you need. So if you have legislation or you have a union contract that changes, there's basically a block of hours that's set aside that we support you with. If there's a bug that we didn't catch in warranty, we fix it over there. It's essentially, you know, prepaid as part of the fixed price. And that's kind of how the sort of that 5 years of post-implementation support kind of pans out. And then back to the schedule, I wanted to make this point. We were talking about the requirements and managing, you know, how do we get to a schedule and keep it on track. One of our founding partners was fond of saying something that I like to repeat. And he said, you know, decisions are the oxygen of a project. And so what we really need to work effectively is to be able to make decisions that keep the project moving. And so there, you know, there's two or three things that bog decisions down. One's distrust. The other is misunderstanding. And so we need someone who can arbitrate those decisions on the contra costa side. So we have had times in the past where a client gets bogged down in really trying to decide how they want to do things next. So if we have a process that you've been doing in the past and we're automating that process a little bit now, you can really get bogged down in, you know, where do we go next, right? Like how are we going to do that? And so internally that can really bog things down. And so getting decisions is really important for us to keep the project moving. In other words, if you tell us what to do, we can keep working. If we don't know what to do, then we just kind of, things just kind of can grind to a halt, and that can be problematic. But that's my slide pretty much on the schedule. If you have any questions. Nope. Okay. 19, please. So once we get to the code or to the post-implementation period, the code will be held in escrow for you. And in fact, that actually starts about a few weeks after the project starts. So once we sign the contract, we'll take our current base version that we're starting with, and we will give that to Iron Mountain to hold for you. And that's protection in case we go out of business. So that doesn't leave you with an inability to continue to use your system or finish your project. The solution's warranted, like I said, 12 months from final acceptance. And then you're supported by our staff, as I said earlier on, that had actually already worked on the project. And so that's really sort of your five-year look, you know, once you get the system into production. Are there any questions about the post-production period? Okay, 20, please. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about hosting. That may be something a little bit new, but the system that we're going to give you is, as I said, hosted by Microsoft. And the system and the data are both redundant at a primary site. So there's actually several computers that hold that information at the primary site. So if one of them bugs out, they just simply fail over to another one and you really don't notice that it's gone. The backup site's in a geographically separate location. Probably where they will be here is your primary site's probably going to be around Austin, Texas, and your backup site's probably going to be in Virginia. But I don't know that yet for sure. The data is actually streamed. So in the old days when we had this thing we called the backup, right? So overnight, what happened was we would just run this job and it would copy all this data and then move it to some backup site. And so if you lost your data in the middle of the afternoon, you would lose a half of day. What happens now is we stream the data. So the data is constantly being written to the backup site in real time. And it takes about 15 minutes to cycle that data over to the backup site. So if you actually had a shutdown and you had to go to disaster recovery and restore, about the most work that you would lose is about 15 minutes. So that's a really nice improvement that's happened in recent years, and that's really a function of the way Microsoft manages its hosting solutions. All of your data belongs to you, and I'd also like to point out all of what we call your metadata belongs to you, and that's the definition of what your data is. So instead of, you know, if you ever needed that data to go to a new vendor, you didn't want to do business with us anymore, we don't just give you a pile of letters and numbers. We actually tell you what all those letters and numbers mean. And that may seem kind of obvious, but we actually have a situation right now where we're taking over for a vendor and the exiting vendor wants to give us the data, but they don't want to tell us what it is. So again, that all belongs to you, and we'll also provide you a local copy. So as a sort of an extra layer of security, in addition to the copy that's held in two places by Microsoft, we're going to give back a local copy to you on a routine basis. Yes, I'm sorry.
Now, talking about your backup system, and we were talking earlier about having the people that come in with the, you know, that lock you out of your system for and want to have
the ransomware?
Ransom, I'm sorry. Does this cover that, where you say you've got a backup system that's 100% covered, and then if it goes under a ransomware situation, you can just lock it out and start all over again?
Well, you would have the alternate site, so you've got to be able to basically take over the Microsoft site, which would be challenging. And then you would have to be able to get a hold of the backup site too. I mean, it's not physically impossible, but it's logically very, very improbable.
Well, no, what I was kind of looking for is if it happened to us just to the basic site, is it going to be easy for us to recover that? And if somebody is demanding a ransom, you can just tell them to go pound sand and lock them out and go about your business?
Yeah. I frankly would have to get back to you about how that would be. We haven't had a ransomware situation, and I'm not particularly experienced with it. I do have, you know, the fellow who helps us with this. I can get an answer rather quickly, and I'll be happy to bring one back. But I don't know if I would go so far as to say it's that open and shut. It may be, but I would rather not make a commitment like that on the fly.
Okay.
But I'll take a note, and I will follow up and have him deliver an explanation about how that would work.
First step will be to lock Mike's system. Lock it down.
But clearly having things in multiple places gives you much more flexibility with those types of things. Probably about as far as I could take it without a deeper dive from our CIO who deals with all of our hosting and security and infrastructure. Okay, 21, please. Thank you. Okay, so this is, we're getting kind of down to the end. So this is the pricing slide, which shows you how the project's funded. You'll notice it's about on the front end, the basic implementation services is almost $7 million. And then when you get into the back end services, the column that say year one through five, those can be broken down really into sort of three areas. One is the platform maintenance, which I was talking about earlier, which is the fee you pay so that the upgrades come to you for no additional cost. Then there's just labor time for the support. So we provide you a team and a set of hours every year to maintain your system and also do, enhancements as we've talked about. And then there's just some a smaller portion of that would be things like commodity software. So if you see in the on the second line where it says commodity software at about $109,000, in those out years, there's typically renewal fees that come up for those. And so that would be a portion of that. And that's, kind of how it all rolls out there to the right at, my screen's a little bit blocked. I think it's $12,436,000, if I recall right. Are there any questions just about the structure and how that's done or? No? Okay. All right, so I think we're getting near the end, and we're going to let Bjorn give you a little show of how things work. So next slide, please. All right, so again, I think we believe that we have very predictable cost over the life of the contract. Your solution upgrades are included, so you're going to get you could get security patches in that as often as every month or two. When they're available, we push them out. We have minor upgrades about every year and a half and major upgrades about every 3 years. So we go, to a whole different version. Again, we put that out there that your responsibility in that is largely just to test it with us. We will test it thoroughly before we bring it into you and make sure that anything we did not break any of your customizations. And we assure you that those will always, we're not going to give you a new version that's going to send you back to the drawing board with something you've already done and make you rework it, which is a common problem with certain package software. The hosting and support is included in that price. And, as Ed was saying, one of the things we will do is once we get into that post-production period, it's not like you'll never hear from us. Ed does a really good job, and he's really done a lot for us since he's joined the company in terms of making sure that he stays in touch with us when we get to the post-production period, so you don't feel like you're just sort of sending your money off somewhere and nobody ever cares about you anymore. So Ed will be the guy who will be checking in with you on a very regular basis. He'll make whatever presentations you know, the staff wants to them or to you. And he'll kind of take care of you to make sure you're getting what you paid for from end to end. Next slide. All right. Are there any final questions for me? If not, Bjorn's going to give you a tour of our solution.
Are you going to be around for questions after that?
Yes. Yes. I'll definitely be here. Okay. Bjorn.
All right. It says, I'm trying to share, but it says you cannot share while others are presenting. Good. Thank you. All right. And I'm hitting share screen. And I'm going to share screen number 2. And all right. So let me hide this so it's not floating. All right. So $1 million question, is everyone able to see? You should be able to see 3 tabs on the top of this browser. One of them is my member self-service portal we're looking at here. Another is my employer self-service portal here. And a third is the internal line of business here. Can everyone see my screen okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right. So what I want to give is kind of a real high level run through of NeoSpin and then talk about kind of the capabilities, show you a couple features. I want to go through the process of what an employer would do when they have a payroll file that they need to report. Say they have a new member that they want to enroll in the system and what that process would look like. And then also I want to go through the process of once that payroll report has been submitted, how they would provide the invoice. Then I'll show the general ledger transactions that are tied to that. Then we'll jump in and show kind of a little bit of the internal line of business, how that looks, that your actual CSERA staff would use when they log in to do their daily work. And then the last piece would touch on what a member would experience. So I'm going to go through the retirement process of a person who's eligible to claim a benefit. And then once they are done with submitting their application online, we can request some missing documentation, go through the process of calculating their benefit, and then transitioning them to payroll. And then anywhere along the line, if anyone has any questions, please, I would like this to be as interactive as possible. I want to make sure you're getting a pretty good feel for how the system works and how everything is architected. So if there's anything that you would like me to elaborate on, please don't hesitate and just jump right in or raise your hand, whatever's necessary. I'll try to keep an eye on the windows down below to see. I have to use dual monitors here for the presentations, just for my personal sanity. So here we go. In NeoSpin, there are going to be 3 primary regions that we will be working with throughout the course of the project. And then once we go live, how your staff, your employers, and your membership will be interacting with the system. So the first one here, and this is going to be the internal line of business. So this is where the CSERA staff would log in. So once you log in, you'll be brought into your dashboard. On the dashboard, you can see we have some things like my work. So what is it that is assigned to you currently from various business processes that have been initiated, whether an employer has submitted a payroll report, maybe we've received a legal document for a guardian or the request to create a new record in the system. We could also have things that are received from members. A service retirement application was received. We'll see that in just a few minutes. Right? Or we could have internal business processes that we have reached the point where we want to run benefit payroll, we want to run the reconciliation reports, and then run the final payroll to cut the checks for the month. So this would be the repository where a business user would see, here's the work that's assigned to me, and then kind of map out their day. We have enterprise knowledge. We know that very often that's going to be a necessary thing to go into the knowledge base to search for information. So for example, if you have in the call center, an employer calls in and they have a question saying, I'm having difficulty with doing my employer payroll reporting. When you click on the enterprise knowledge, now we have the employer activities for processing a file, uploading the file manually, or processing it internally. So these help functions are embedded directly into the line of business. Now, because NeoSpin is built in such a way that there's only one code base, there's only one database. And what we do is integrate everything. All 3 of these regions are going to be seamlessly integrated from the end user's perspective. So these items that we're seeing here in Notion, our knowledge management tool, would be available from the internal line of business. It would also be available from the web self-service portals, either from the member or the employer side. Now, of course, the specific topics would be relevant to the business user accessing it. There would be no need for a member to see how to do employer reporting activities. So those types of things, we would, based on their roles, represent the information that's relevant to them. So integration with your calendar. So you're going to see the ability to view meetings that are available online, have members register for those meetings online. And then this would pop up and show you if you have any meetings that are scheduled. Then there's some social media integration as well, where we can see, you know, here's, we linked it to your Cicera Twitter account, then also to Facebook. You want to maybe keep track of the things that are trending, make sure that you're always aware of what's happening on social media, because those things can run away in a hurry. Then we have the second area of the system right here. This is the member self-service portal. So this is where your active members, your retirees, could be your benefit recipients like a beneficiary, or possibly someone acting on behalf of a benefit recipient like a power of attorney or a guardian. They would be able to log in here and access functions like administering their accounts, providing for service purchase benefit estimates or applications for benefits. We can view statements. And then, as I just mentioned, we could view webinars and seminars that are available coming up. In this case, there's a service retirement seminar that's going to be coming up on the 21st of June, and they could register for this meeting at that time. We can see this person's already attended one some time ago back in 2019. So meeting integration in there, whether it's going to be webinars and seminars, or if you wanted to say, have a one-on-one meeting with a counselor at CSERA, we can see that there are some one-on-one meetings that are available for registration here as well. Then the last thing that we have in here is the employer self-service portal. So this is where your various employers would log in, and they would be able to do their employer payroll reporting activities, uploading new files, enrolling new members, administering their employment. Say someone goes on a leave of absence, or they return from a leave of absence, or we need to provide terminations. We can do those types of things. We can view the staff that they have on file if we ever wanted to do any kind of maintenance activities with your staff and we wanted to see the details of this individual. We can drill down and see, you know, their demographic information, their employment history, the addresses that they have on file. So if we ever needed to have kind of an interaction with the employer and the staff, they can do that as well. But the meat of what the employers are going to be doing through here is through the employer payroll reporting processing. So what I have done is I've accessed here the employer payroll reporting menu. I've gone into the payroll summary in here, and I'm just going to quickly do a search for employer payroll reports. Now, I took the liberty of already uploading a file ahead of time so that we don't have to watch that batch run, but NeoSpin does provide the capability to upload files for the employer payroll reporting. We can upload files for new enrollments or the maintenance of their employment as well. So you can combine both of them into a single file, or you can do them separately. It depends on the, you know, the business purposes and the business needs that you have. I'm going to go ahead and open up this employer payroll summary that we have in here that has not yet been posted. So what this is going to do is this is going to show me, all right, here is CSERA. We have reported the PEPRA General Tier 5 benefit program. The pay period end date is March 31. So this is the month that just ended. Now we're receiving the payroll report for the month of March. The big thing in here is that the status of this is currently review. So there's some kind of issues that need to be worked through in order to complete the submission of this. Now, this gives the opportunity here to be proactive. We want to make sure that the data, when it arrives from the employers into CSERA, is as clean as it can possibly be, and that any errors that can be resolved by the employer have been corrected prior to submitting it. And then that allows you at CSERA to really focus on the more mission critical things that the employers are not able to solve. So we can see in here, this was uploaded through a file. So here's the March 2021 file. Currently it's not posted. And what I'm gonna do is open up this employer payroll summary and with this header right here and see the details of what's inside. So inside of this, we can see a summary of the information in this file. Right, so it's from March 1 to March 31 of this year, and there are total contributions that have been reported, $13,000, just a little over. There's a total of 9 records that are in here that have been reported as well. And we have the additional information like what types of validations. Well, one or more of the records in this file is in review status. So if I go down into my maintenance functions down in here, I can see here's the breakdown of the contributions, pre-tax and post-tax, employer pickup. If any interest is due on the contribution, say we have a retroactive contribution that's being received from a few years back and there would have been interest that's eligible to be posted to those contributions, we can have an interest component included as well. If I view them by the error type, a few errors that are in here and the specific errors, a couple of them have the contributions that are reported don't match the contributions the system calculated. And one of them is for a member that does not yet exist in the system. So they put someone on the payroll report, but that person yet does not yet exist in the system. And we're going to go through the process of correcting that, right? So if I go into these by status, NeoSpin automatically sorts them. So the ones that need to be reviewed are up at the top of the screen. Now I have the ability to do multi-select so I can open multiple records to work on in a data set at one time. So I don't have to search and retrieve and search and retrieve those records. So I'm going to go ahead, select these two records and open them. When I do that, now this is the payroll detail. So this is the individual information related to this person. So here is Anna Roberts. And she is a participant in the PEPRA General Tier 5. And we can see in here, the contribution breakdown has been reported. And if I look at the validations in here, it's saying the pre-tax employee contributions don't match what was calculated. So if I look at this record, I can see that the employer reported $1,054 in here for the employee contribution, but the system calculated $1,045. So this looks like a case where maybe two numbers were transposed and we need to correct that. So instead of the $1,054, I'm going to update that to be $1,045 in here. And then when I save that update, you can see the status immediately goes into this valid status in here. So that tells the employer, you've done what's necessary to correct the erroneous data that was provided in this file. And now let's move to the second one. So you can see here at the top, I'm on record one of two because I did select those two records in the record set. When I navigate to the second record, if I look at the validations in here, this is the member that does not yet exist in the system. So this person here, John Cantrell, has been reported in the payroll, but has not yet been added into the system by the employer. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna click on this enroll now function. So this gives me the ability to walk through the enrollment process to add John into the system. Then once he's added, the system can recognize what benefit program and tier does he belong in. So we can go through and then assign the appropriate contribution rate to his record and make sure the contributions are accurate. So when I click on the enroll now in here, the system is gonna bring me into a wizard. Now, one of the patterns that we've seen is a leading practice, especially when going to external stakeholders, such as members and employers, if they need to go through a multi-step process, in this case, the enrollment process is kind of a multi-step process. You can see here on the left, we have to put in the details of their benefit program. In this case, they're in the PEPRA General Tier 5. Then if I move into the next step in the process, what is this employee's information? So here's John Cantrell. Right, I'm going to say that this person is a male. He was born on January 1 of 1980. And I'm going to say his marital status, he's married. Now, if we had to put in additional information like their phone number or their email, we can provide that. Now, another thing that you're going to see in here, anywhere we have this little red asterisk behind the fields that are displayed in the screen, that's going to tell the business user that the information you've provided needs to be entered in here. So if this was a blank field and I tried to navigate to the next step in the wizard, NeoTrack would provide me an error indicating that missing information is required. So if I hit next in here, you can see in the top of the screen, address line 1, city, state, and zip is required. So I'm going to go ahead and put in 123 Main Street. And we're going to put them in Concord. All right, and then when I go into the next step, now that I've corrected this error, when I go into the next step, now I can capture information about this individual's employment. So what position is he in? Now this, going back to a question that Jerry asked a little earlier, right? How easy it is it to add these things? Well, we understand that out of the box, that we are not going to have all of the configurations that you require for your business needs. But we do have behind the scenes a table that will capture what is this individual's job position. And then during the design, we would work through adding to that table, here are the different job positions that are there. And then if there's additional information required about that job position, we can capture that at the same time. So we're going to go in, put his job position as classified. I'm going to say this person, since we're reporting for the month of March, was eligible to start on March 1st of 2021. When I move into the last step, another leading practice, always show the business user a summary of the information that they provided. So in this case, here they are in PEPRA General Tier 5 in a classified position. Starting on March 1st, here is the information that we've entered for them, including their address. When I move into the submit function, now NeoSpin recognizes, hey, a new enrollment has been provided for this person. Let's go through now and revalidate this detail record that had a few problems with it and see if those problems go away. So once I hit save in here, now you can see that record goes to valid. And once it goes to valid, all of the errors that we had go away, because now that we've enrolled this person, the system can then validate what contribution rate are they subject to as a participant in that PEPRA General Tier 5. We can validate then that the contributions that were reported match the contributions that were calculated, and then we can move forward with the processing of this report. Now, we've gone through and done a couple things. We corrected the erroneous contribution rate. We enrolled a brand new member. So the last thing that I want to do now is go through the process of submitting this and then creating the payment for the receivable due for this contribution report. So here we can see now the status of the summary has gone up to valid. So everything has been corrected. And from the employer side, everything here is clean. There's nothing else that they need to do to continue correction of their work. So I'm gonna go ahead and select and submit this. We can put in here the electronic signature for the individual that's submitting it. And then now dynamically, what NeoSpin does is it recognizes, hey, now that you've submitted this, you want to pay an invoice. So we've generated an invoice for this. You can see the invoice created automatically gets updated to yes. So this is an automated feature that happens behind the scenes where system recognizes a payroll report was received. We can create the corresponding invoice for that receivable. And I can either go through the pay now option in here or select this button and pay the selected invoices. So what this is going to do is bring me into another wizard where I'm going to select any invoices that I want to pay. Now, in this case, I only selected one. By default, NeoSpin automatically has the full balance due to be paid. If there are any credits outstanding for this employer, so if they maybe overpaid in a previous month by however much money, we could then allocate this to the receivable. Or if they paid in advance and they wanted to now take that advance payment and apply it to this receivable, they could do that as well. So you can see here are available remittances. I'm going to assume that they don't want to use either of these yet. And we're going to go through the next step in the process. They're going to create now a deposit. So you can see NeoSpin accepts any number of deposits, ACH debit, wire transfers, checks that can be coming in, however the employer wants to pay. Most common that we've seen in the recent years is going to be the ACH debit. I'm going to say, I want that payment to be taken on the 30th of this month. Then what bank am I going to take it from? So we do have the ability to define what banks they have. If you see here a little bit on the left-hand side of the menu, their finance menu, they can manage their banks. So this organization has provided a bank that they want to use for this ACH debit transaction. When I move to the last step in the process, I get into my verify and submit. So similar to that, what we saw in the enrollment wizard, here's the summary of everything that I just provided. One final opportunity to review everything before submitting it. If I made a mistake, I could use the previous button and go back through the wizard. Now, once again, I am going to go ahead and submit this payment for this payroll report. And then when I go back to my homepage, right, we can see this payroll report is now processed. There's no outstanding balance for it, and everything is set to go. You can see automatically this new member, John Contrell, is a new hire. He's been added to the system as well. And what that gives us is the ability, if there is any follow-up information, oftentimes what I've experienced in the enrollment process is that there's information that the employer may need to provide outside of just the demographic and the employment information. There may be documents, especially for public safety employees, policemen and firemen. They may have to provide information about their certification, say from the academy, to ensure that they're eligible for that position. So if that's the case, we make it very easy then to link to additional information that's going to be required from that member or from that employer. So display that on the screen. So the next thing I'm going to do now, we're going to assume that everything from the employer side here is good to go. And I'm going to navigate to the internal line of business. So one of the questions that came up is, how does the system notify CSERA staff that the employer has completed some type of transaction that I need to be aware of, and then what do I do with that transaction once I get there? So to do that, I'm going to now navigate back into the internal line of business. So now I'm switching hats. I'm moving from being an employer, and I'm transferring back over being to a CSERA staff who's going to be receiving notification that the employer did some work. So I'm going to refresh my dashboard. And now in here, you're going to see there are a few new work items that were created as a result of the submission of that enrollment, as well as from the submission of that employer payroll report. So if I would click on this review and post the enrollments function right here, this is going to bring me to an internal view of this person's enrollment. So here is the information that was just provided. Here's John Cantrell. He's married. Here's the address that we put in. Here's his employment information. If there is any additional work that needs to be done. Now, the most frequently exercised internal work that I've seen here is a possible duplicate record. So if, say, for example, this person, you know, the SSN that was provided, maybe they transposed two numbers in the social security number, similar to the way that we saw two numbers transposed in that employer payroll report for the contributions. What NeoSpin would do is that recognize, hey, there's another record in the system that's eerily similar to the one that you've provided. Let's take a review and make sure that before we go through and post this thing and create a new record for them, that this isn't the duplicate. So this is an opportunity now that if there's some additional work that needed to be done by CSERA staff, this workflow would give you the opportunity to do it. Now, in this case, nothing is needed, right? Everything is good to go. So I'm going to go ahead in my task and mark this as completed. And when I go back into my dashboard, now that item goes away. Now, the second item I'm going to show in here is posting the employer payroll header. So if I go ahead in here and hit this post employer payroll header line item, now this is where the CSERA staff would be notified, hey, an employer has submitted a contribution report. In this case, here it is for that PEPRA General Tier 5. And in here, here is a breakdown of the contributions. Here's the month of March 2021. If I want to look at all the detail records that were provided, here is a list of all those detail records that were included in the file, including the new detail record for this member, John Cantrell. Now, again, I'm going to assume that everything in here is clear, but I just wanted to notify or to point out that in the event that additional work needed to be completed by the employer that or by the CSERA staff that maybe an employer is not capable of doing or just something that you're not ready to deploy to the Wealth Self-Service portal yet, NeoSpin would recognize those things. We have external edits and internal edits. Then you would be notified in the action items in here that there are additional work that needs to be completed, and then you would go through and do that. Now, another thing I want to show you is how easy it is to navigate to the records once they have been received. So here is an employer payroll header with a list of the detail records that were provided. So now what you can see for John Cantrell, here is the membership account that was just created for him. When I navigate down into this record, now it's going to bring me into this membership account maintenance screen. So what this is going to give me is a snapshot of this individual. So you can see this is a PEPRA General Tier 5 membership account, membership date beginning on March of 2021. Start date of that account is on the same day. Now, the reason there are two dates in here, what we have seen throughout the years, many times when you have a new employee that begins employment with an eligible and qualified employer, there may be a waiting period. There may be a 3-month or a 6-month waiting period between the time they get hired and the time their membership can commence and they can start contributing. So we do keep those separate dates. Again, kind of a leading practice to make sure that we do accommodate discrepancies if there are between when a person starts working and when they become qualified to be a member in that system. If I dive down a little bit further, we can see here's that employment history. So they work for CSERA starting on 3-1 of 2021. And if I want to look at the transactions in this membership account, what this is going to show me is here, I received one transaction, right? That transaction was posted today on the 14th of March. It is a regular transaction. Here's the salary that was reported. Here are the contributions that were reported for that salary. And as I continue to navigate across this record, the last thing that we see here, what is the reference? So what this is going to provide is what is the source of this transaction? So in this case, if I click on the link right here, what that's going to do, this is going to bring me now directly to the detail record of that employer payroll report that was responsible for the creation of that line item in the member's account. So in this case, here is the employer payroll header for PEPRA General Tier 5. And here is the employer payroll detail for John Cantrell and the corresponding line items for the transactions, the salary that was reported. And that kind of completes this first loop. So we went through the process of correcting errors in a file by the employer, making sure that the data by the time it reaches CSERA is as clean as it can possibly be. Then we were notified of that contribution report submission and the new enrollment via a workflow that was presented to us in our dashboard. Then we looked at the account that was created brand new for that new member and then reviewed the details of the transactions that were associated with it. So now, while I'm in here, I'm going to open up another member's record, and that record is going to show me some additional details. So I'm going to pull up the record of a person who's been in the system for a little while. So I'm going to go into my menus over here. Now, the most common way that you're going to navigate to records is going to be driven through this workflow. You'll be notified that there's work that needs to be done and access it through the notification via workflow. But if I select this top menu here on the left-hand side of the screen, these are going to be the various modules that NeoSpin provides. So there's a person module where we manage things like their demographic information, legal documents, and service purchases. Here's an organization module where we would then capture the information about the various employers or other organizations, financial institutions that you interact with, and the contacts that work for those organizations. Here's our employer payroll reporting functionality that we just viewed. For benefit claims, we have it broken into two parts, applications and calculations. Then there's the outbound benefit payments. So all of the benefit payments that get distributed, whether it's to a retiree of CSERA or a beneficiary of one of those retirees, the administration of the benefit payroll process. If we needed to put kind of any messages on the outbound checks, we have that in the check stub message. So if you wanted to put out, you know, during the holidays, have a fantastic holiday season, you can post messages on those checks behind the scenes. Here's our finance menu. So the finance folks, you can see in here, this is where all of our deposits would be received, our invoices, the general ledger transactions associated with that, including the chart of accounts. We would include that, the general ledger item configuration, and then the transactions. So while I'm here, I'm going to quickly jump into our general ledger transactions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to search, here is the ability to search for transactions that were created by any combination of things. We can look at it by the fund, we can look at it by the account, by a specific person or an organization that created that transaction, any number of things to target the specific information you want. And since we are looking at transactions created today, if I go ahead and do a search in here, at the bottom of the screen, you are going to see all of the transactions that were created for this month. So here are the transactions that were a result of the posting of this contribution report, right? So here are the details of all of those items. Here's the remittance that's been allocated. Here's the debit account and the credit account that's associated with it. We have the dual entry accounting. And then in here as well, what you're going to see, if I click on this reference, I'm sorry, go ahead, please. Hey, yes.
Jordan, this is Jeff. In the interest of time, we might need to wrap this up. I understand we might be running up against the time. I hate to interrupt you. Can you sort of finish your thought with this one and maybe see if there's questions? I'm sorry.
I can do that. Do you want to see anything?
Jeff. I was glad you asked, because I just wanted to ask Bjorn if this was going to be on the test later, because I just wanted to be sure.
It is. There's a test, and you get a star behind your name on the schedule next week in the break room for doing well. So I can go into any level of detail. I can roll it up really quick, walk through a service retirement that a member would provide, call it done, whatever you want to see. There was some interest in seeing the general ledger. There was interest in seeing contact tickets. So if we need to wrap, and I can get long-winded, unlike giving a PowerPoint presentations, which are always really concise. Right, Jeff?
Yes.
There, he gets a smile. Very good. So you tell me, from CSERA's side, is there anything that I can show you that would help you to understand NeoSpin? Anything that specifically you would like to see that's a pain point? Or I will put a button in it and hand it back over to Jeff to close out.
I'd like to see more on the member
portal.
Member's able to do. And
yeah, absolutely. All right. So in here, now I'm just going to refresh to make sure I didn't get timed out of this. So I'm going to refresh this. Yep. See, so your security staff should be happy if you are inactive for a period of time, that it will give you the requirement to log back in. So in here, right, I'm going to quickly run through high level activities. So in here, I can manage my profile information, the addresses that I have on file. We do support regular addresses and then seasonal addresses if you have anyone that kind of goes as a snowbird and they travel for a period of time every year, administration of your phone number, communication preferences. So there's going to be no shortage of outbound communications that are going to be generated by NeoSpin. This can define how the member wants to receive them, whether through email, postal mail, or the web self-service portal. We can manage the relationships that you have on file. So in this case, this person has their spouse designated, and then how those relationships are used if they're a beneficiary in their accounts. I can see the different benefit programs that are available for an individual. And then when I drive into those, we can see the account summary, their contributions, the interest that they've earned, their employment history, the beneficiaries that they've designated here as that member's spouse or their domestic partner. I can create benefit estimates. So if I wanted to go through and capture a calculation for how much my benefit would be, when I hit the create benefit estimate for this teacher's tier one, NeoSpin is going to look for what is the earliest date this person's eligible to retire. So the first that they're eligible for is this month on April 1st. On the right, you'll be able to see there's a bunch of line items that as we go through and provide different information like tax calculations, or if we choose different benefits, it would capture the information related to that service retirement. We can submit requests for a service credit purchase cost estimate. We can go through and submit withdrawal for those members that want to take a withdrawal of their contributions. The service retirement process will follow very similar to what we saw earlier. Here's a wizard where we would select the account that they want to go through and retire on. This person was eligible to retire, you know, some time ago. We can say that they're going to retire on the first of this month, take the single life option. Then NeoSpin would calculate the benefit and show here are the next things that are available for you. If you want to calculate hypothetical taxes, how much would it be if I took these taxes out of my benefit and I go ahead and go to the next step? It's going to calculate my taxes for me. How do I want that benefit distributed? I'm going to put in 100% into my membership account, and this would allow me to then, or into my U.S. bank account, then getting the summary screen where I would submit the information, have one final opportunity to review what was provided. I will submit that, and then that would then submit the application created internally. I'm going to wait a second. There's a batch process, just like we saw with the submission of the employer payroll report. From the employer self-service portal, NeoSpin triggered a work item for a business user to be notified that this employer has done some work. Well, in this case, the member has submitted a benefit application, and behind the scenes, we've configured a number of different checklist items that are required. So we know that when we're processing a benefit claim, there's no shortage of documentation that needs to be provided based upon the type of benefit you've selected. So when I go into my message board in here, and I'm going to refresh this, right, it's going to take just a moment to have for the batch process to recognize I submitted this claim. I'll show you that in 1 second. Statements, if we have any statements on file, in this case, this person does have an annual statement, so they can download that directly from here. They don't need to call CSERA to generate that anymore because the statement is going to be available for them. Here is a copy of Albert Lee's statement that was created for the year 2019. Again, we saw the ability to view upcoming seminars, and if I wanted to register for one of those seminars, it gives me the option to indicate, are there any special requests that I have if the person is hearing impaired, or maybe they have a service animal, or they need some wheelchair accessibility. Those things can be provided in their registration. If they're going to bring a guest, they can do that as well. Uploading documents, the member can upload missing documents if required. So if I go back into my message board, in this case here, this system recognized that there's some missing documentation required for the processing of this benefit claim. NeoSpin automatically generated a communication for that recipient indicating, you know, here, Albert Lee, congratulations on your retirement. We need you to provide a birth certificate. So once the member receives that notification in their web self-service portal, they could go into this upload document file, choose service retirement application documents and say, I want to provide a birth certificate. I'm going to go ahead and choose, here is that birth certificate, and upload it. Now NeoSpin will recognize, hey, I've requested a service or a birth certificate from Albert Lee for his retirement. Albert has provided that document. Then it would notify an internal business user, a missing document has been provided for this retirement, resume the workflow and write it to the business user. Last option in here, we have the ability to contact us. So if we had a member that wanted to have some specific information, say they wanted to make a demographic update that's not allowed. Maybe they got married and they wanted to change their last name, right? How are you going to respond to me? I'm going to respond through email, pick the email address that you want to send it for, and then I can submit that. You can see automatically NeoSpin created a line item for the contact ticket. This person has created a contact ticket before, and if I ever want to see the detail of those contact ticket logs, they would be provided in the bottom of the screen here. So I went into a little of auctioneer mode, but I will stop talking and hand it over. Thank you, Jerry.
Yes. Okay. No, it's okay. I'm sorry. I don't want to be rude here, but
No.
Up against time. I want to give you an opportunity to take a breath.
Sure.
Take a long, deep breath. Now, there's a guy who really knows his subject matter. I give you that.
Yes, absolutely.
There is an action item on the agenda. And yes, I want to make sure we have the opportunity to actually get to that action item and have a quorum to be able to do it. So
certainly.
Respectfully and through the chair, I'd like to say maybe there's a place where we can wrap this up at this point. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as you said, Jerry, I know the system. I know every nook and cranny in the system. I will be supporting John and the team in the delivery of your product every step of the way, right? Throughout the years, other people, I've let them into my house and they maybe rearranged the furniture, but I still know where everything is and how it works. And I will be with you 100% of the time from this project. I'm committed. 10% of my time is allocated specifically to CSERA. You'll see me in the meetings. You'll see me participating in it. So I certainly look forward to working with all of you. Hopefully you got a little bit of a feel for how NeoSpin works in a very rapid fire way. And I will stop talking and I'm going to take off my glasses and
thanks. Hand it thanks over. For letting us know that you come to people's houses because I'm going to set up my ring camera to try That's and okay. recognize you.
That's all right. Just wait for Halloween. You're going to be surprised at what you see.
That was great. I have several questions. I appreciate that presentation. I'm excited about the member portal. It's something we've been trying to create, tackle for quite a while, and it looks very promising. Unfortunately, it's not going to be available till 2023 or 24, I guess. I wish that was sooner. Will this member portal be a part? How does this get integrated into our CSERA website? Is there a link to go to that? Or?
Yeah, from your CSERA website, we would provide a link to say, click on here to log into your web self-service portal and you would go directly into it. Or if there's ever an outbound communication that gets generated, so say we schedule a retirement seminar and we say on July 1, there's going to be a retirement seminar at the CSERA offices. Identify a population eligible to participate and send them an email saying, hey, you should be aware that this retirement seminar is happening on this day. We embed links directly within those emails to say, click on this link to follow it to register for the meeting. And then it would navigate you into the web self-service portal login screen where you would provide your credentials. We do integrate with Entrust for third-party authentication of those credentials to make sure that the right people are logging in to prevent any ransomware from going into John's account. So those are the types of things that we would do. Yes.
And document upload.
Yes, sir.
That's a secure process, right? If someone's going to upload their social security information and all that stuff, is there, I just assume that this is all through a secure.
Yes. Yep. It's like, it's sort of the equivalent of dropping it on, if you're familiar with like FTP sites where you can drop something on securely, it's effectively the same thing.
Okay. And if a member has a question about a calculation and the software has done the calculation and the member says, I don't think that's right. How do they appeal that? Does the counselor say, well, that's what the program said. So that's what it is. How do we go through that?
Yeah, no. There's a number of ways. So I'm not sure if I'm still sharing my screen. I think I'm not, right?
That could turn off. I can see it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So in here, right? So here's one way we could find out. So we do have our chat feature and this is a chat bot. So if I type in say retirement And I put in that as an option, right? This is something that we can train. We can put in different keywords and then different responses to that. It takes a second for chatbot to go through and recognize that someone asked a question about this. So now it's going to look for responses that are related to it. And here we have, right? So here's general retirement. Here's my benefits letter, any of the items that are related to it. And then if I wanted to ask questions about general retirement, for example, then we can train it. So here, what is my final average salary? All of the details behind that. And then if you wanted to drill down and see how is my final average salary calculated, well, here exactly is where we can provide that information. So that's one option to put basic questions like that in the chat. So if they would say, how is my benefit calculated? You could give them, here is my calculation formula that it's this multiplied by this times this equals this. We do have in our benefit estimate calculator the ability to display these are the specific steps that were completed in order to determine what your benefit was. We use this much service credit, we use this benefit multiplier, this was your reduction factor for early retirement, and here's the output of that. And then as mentioned, we can definitely go into the contact us function in here. And if you say that this person has a question about the benefit estimate and says, how was this calculated? Right, then you can send that in. That would create a contact ticket, get routed to a business user where they would be notified. And then if they wanted to, using the chat functionality, it's not just limited to the chat bot where you have automated responses, but I could type in the assist function where if you noticed in the internal line of business also, here is then the window that a business user would be able to have a live chat with a member and say, you know, here's what we're doing. And then the last thing that I want to show you is our dashboard in here. You can see there's an internal facing version of the member portal and an external facing version. Now the internal, this is what CSERA staff could log into, and they could be logging in as a member and saying, okay, I wanna see what John Smith is seeing in that person 51914 that we were just looking at, what are they seeing? And then while the member is logging in to the external facing version where they would do their updates, the CSERA staff could say, all right, on your homepage, do you see this on the left-hand menu screen? Ah, yes, I do. And then the member would say, okay, click on that. And then the CSERA staff would click on that and say, now, do you see benefit estimates as an option in here? Oh, yes, I do. And then click on that. And then you can route them right through so that they would be able to see exactly what it is that the member is seeing, because it's the exact same portal. It's just a different version, a different view of it from internal staff to external. And then you can really guide your membership through, here are the challenges that you have, because that's oftentimes the biggest thing is navigating around websites, trying to find where information is. So does that answer your question, David?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. The other issue that we deal with is how long it takes to get a benefit statement out to our members. And so we go like based on December 31st of the year in question. Mm-hmm. So let's say that we're looking for 2020. Based on by December 31st, 2020, when would that benefit statement be available to members?
So there's two pieces, right? The first is that there's kind of the mass production of the benefit statements for everyone. And then we generate those on an annual basis. And usually the process to run those when we generate them, I've seen kind of it takes the course of a weekend to batch. Now you, as an agency that's not, you know, as large as someone like a CalSTRS where they have hundreds of thousands of participants, right? You have a significantly lower number. So in the course of a weekend, we could easily generate those benefit statements. But what we also have, if you're seeing my screen in here, if I go into my annual process in here, and you see this statement request line item. So what this allows me to do is to request individual statements. So if there's a member that wants to have an individual statement generated at any point, right, I can go in here and I can prompt the system, okay, I want to generate a new item at this time. And what that would do is allow me then to say, I want this member right in here to say, I want to have a member statement or I want to have a benefit statement. I'm going to do it for an individual, and then on here, this now brings me, okay, what effective date do you want it? So it doesn't have to necessarily be January 1 to December 30. We can say, show me my statement for the current year effective through the 30th of April, right? And then I would pick what is the account that I want that for. We can generate this on demand. Now this right here, generating this statement as a one-off thing, this happens in 1 minute. right? We just go through and we aggregate the information from the account, we publish it to their portal, and we can generate that immediately. So you don't have to wait for that annual batch process. We can generate these individual statements whenever you want.
That's fantastic. Our members would absolutely love that.
And David, I just wanted to mention on that note, you know, we are definitely going to see a significant, you know, decrease in the turnaround time that it takes for us to produce the big batch of annual statements from what we're seeing right now. We highly anticipate having a shorter period of producing those statements.
Even before Sagitech steps in, or
no?
Oh, okay.
So, no, I'm saying with the new system, we would see
okay.
That.
All right, and so I would, it's very appealing with respect to how this can help efficiency for our system in general, and it would be nice to hear from Tim Hoppe about how the disability advantages, processing advantages would be helpful, and then also from Rally regarding compliance and auditing and so forth. So I don't know if they're available to say this would be fantastic or not, but anyway, it looks good.
And we can have them address it at a future board meeting too.
John, one quick question. For retirees, they'll be able to still get in this system and do that. Also, putting in their updated information like beneficiaries.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. They can access it. They can update their tax withholding, their direct deposit instructions. If there's ever a need to make any updates to their beneficiaries or request, you know, a change in benefit under kind of the extreme circumstances. Yeah, all of it. It's the portal is for any stakeholder that is a participant in the system, active member, retiree, as mentioned, could be a power of attorney acting on behalf of a member or a guardian acting on behalf of a minor, right? We can do any of those things, sure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And mm-hmm. for retirees, when COLA adjustments happen, mm-hmm. Then they would be notified that this has been approved by the board and your benefit will be adjusted by this amount. As of this date, you will expect to receive such and such, right?
Yep. So we would send out an email notifying them there is a new communication available to download through your message board. Then, as we saw earlier with that missing documentation, there would be a benefit statement saying, here's your previous year's benefit. Now here's the COLA amount. Here's your new benefit going forward.
And we still be able to, I would think, mail stuff in because we have retirees that don't have computers.
Certainly. Certainly.
They don't deal with them.
Okay. Yep, absolutely. And that goes back into that communication preference in here. If we said, I want everything to be sent through postal mail, pick the address that you want to mail it. And then when this type of communication is generated, the communication engine recognizes the preference that the member has designated and then send it out through paper, through email, could just be publishing it to the web self-service, through SMS text message notification. The system has all those capabilities.
Yeah, yes, I just make sure they'll still be able to call and do that because the simple reason is they don't own computers.
Understood. Yes, absolutely. No problem at all.
Thank you.
This is Tim Hoppe. Going back to David's question regarding disabilities,
yes,
what would happen is where we're currently doing a lot of tracking external to our pension administration system. It would actually build it all in, you know, under one umbrella, as well as it may help facilitate the transfer of records to external vendors such as the medical advisor or just external disability counsel.
Yes.
Well, it would put information at the fingertips where we could get a status report of where things are in the process at kind of one-stop shopping.
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're looking at right in here, Tim. So this is where our case management comes into play. We use this when there's multiple stakeholders that are in play, and disability is a perfect example of that. You have the members, you have the employer, you may have a physician or an independent medical examiner, or could be both. The member has a physician and as well as a medical examiner that CSERA uses. So this is where we would define the steps that are required in that. we could define in here the role, who's the business user, who's responsible for completing that activity. So we have the different roles in here. And then when the work gets to this stage in the case, then there would be a notification provided to that individual for what is it. And then you can see the number of work days required in here. So if we start to exceed the service level agreement for any of these, we send notices, we send reminders and follow-ups for them. But yes, all of this is captured in right in-house, and it's all through one single source of truth, one database, one code engine. Yes, that is exactly right.
Hi, this is Jake Wong. Just a quick question. And first, I really appreciate the level of detail. I'm not sure what the appropriate level of detail is for a presentation like this, but if there's a bar, you've certainly crossed over. There was one slide in the presentation on the actual terms of the contract, and I just wanted to be clear what we were being asked to approve here. Is this an approval, the action item? Is the recommendation for the entire up to $13 million amount, or is there some kind of annual option point in there to review the terms that the CEO would have, or what's the actual recommendation?
Today's recommendation for the board's consideration is that up to $13 million amount for approval, which would be the implementation period as well as the 5 years post-implementation.
So all the costs listed there then for the, I think the years 2, 3, 4, 5 were the kind of follow-on consulting amounts. Are those fixed now, or is there potential for those to reprice later?
Those are fixed right now, and there was mentioned earlier that typically the system would last 10 years, so we would expect at least 5 years past the post 5 years that the costs aren't shown, but as we go along, after 5 years of being live on the system. So Sarah can make the determination at that point whether to continue and renew the support and maintenance agreement or find another provider for that. So that's kind of what that would look like.
Yeah, that's great. The say subsequent 5 years, then is there a fixed option at this point? Is that priced also?
No.
And just one question, and I might have covered it, but it was probably a couple hours ago. Way back when you talked about the original six partners that founded the company, mm-hmm. and given that this is maybe a decade long plus relationship, I'm just curious about the kind of ownership and firm stability prospects going forward. It sounds like most five of the six had retired at this point. And
No. One of the six.
One of the
six. Yeah, unfortunately, he had a disability and kind of had to retire due to some health reasons. But the five of the six original partners are still own and work every day at the company.
Okay. And is there a potential then for kind of as they retire, or is there, I mean, what's a kind of ownership distribution and succession planning there?
Well, they don't have any immediate plans. I suspect they would tell you if they were here. They have always operated the company as though it was going to be an ongoing concern. And I can tell you, just generally, they're all kind of in their mid-50s. They're not necessarily getting very old in terms of wanting to, maybe liquidity. I couldn't speak specifically to any individual partners' ambitions, excuse me, but that's about all I know. Anything other than that, I guess I'm not privy to anyway, but I, we have no reason to believe that there's going to be anything changing in the near term.
Any other questions? Okay, my understanding, Sue Ziegler with Siegel, you wanted to participate in this discussion?
Yes. I was just going to go over briefly the next steps for Sisera during the first 6 months of the project. I'm with Siegel, and I'm going to be providing project management oversight, working closely and supporting the Sisera project manager, Jasmine Lee, during the entire project. So I want to say the first 6 months of the project is the startup, project startup and hosting setup activities. And the two primary activities for Sisera are, one, Jasmine and I will be working with Sagitech to finalize and approve the project management plans. Those set the stage for managing the entire effort to ensure the project stays on schedule and within budget with no surprises. The second activity during the startup is Sisera IT will be working with Sagitech to assist as needed in the setup of the hardware and software environment at the hosting site. Following the startup period is the requirements confirmation, which John Finnegan has already described. It's where they're going to go over each one of the requirements that were in the RFP to make sure they're consistently understood between Sisera and Sagitech. For this activity, there's going to be heavy involvement from Sisera subject matter experts from the various business areas. The outcome of the activity is documentation of the requirements as agreed during the sessions. And those feed into the further elaboration and design of the system, which is next. So towards the end of the 6 months, Sagitech will be starting to facilitate those elaboration and design sessions. And that's where the blueprints for building the system are finalized. Again, this will require heavy involvement from the Sisera subject matter experts during the designs for their particular business areas. So that was a short description. I hope I was brief enough. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you, Sue. Okay, if there's no other questions or comments from board members, I'd be happy to entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, the motion is for the recommendation, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, moved by David, second by Scott. Any discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Anderson is no longer present and Finley is no longer present. So Gordon?
Aye.
Holcomb?
Aye.
Kroll?
Aye.
McDonald?
Aye.
Looks like Phillips is no longer present. So Smithy? Aye. Watts? What?
He's with Bueller.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't note that one. Kwan?
Aye.
And Powell?
Aye.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Motion passes 7-0. So thank you and congratulations.
Thank you. We appreciate your confidence.
Yay.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So on to item 11, consider and take possible action to cause an election to be held to fill the upcoming vacancy in the third general seat of the Board of Retirement. Karen, what's going on with this item?
Good afternoon, everyone, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Well, in light of our chairperson, Todd Smithy's upcoming retirement, his seat on the retirement board will be vacant. And to fill that seat, an election has to be held. To initiate that process, we recommend that the board vote today to do so.
Also move.
Second.
Regrettably, but it's required, Todd.
Todd's already muted permanently.
Boy, short timer, right?
That's right.
We take away your voice. I can read lips, Todd. I know what you said.
Yeah. I was glad that part was muted. Again, thank you, Karen. Well, not again. You didn't hear it the first time. Okay.
I was so wishing I had a mute button for Bjorn, but I didn't.
Oh my gosh.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
I like that. I really appreciate that detail. I know it went on.
You could have fooled us, David.
But this is so critical. I mean, this is such a major quantum leap for us. I mean, I appreciate hearing all the information. Yeah. I know it was long, but I really appreciated it.
So any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Gordon.
Aye.
Holcomb.
Aye.
Kroll.
Aye.
MacDonald.
Aye.
Smithy. Aye. Kwan.
Aye.
And Powell.
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. Item 12, consider and take possible action to authorize the issuance of an RFP for death notification services. Gail.
Yes, Sisera currently uses a vendor for death notification services. And from time to time, as you're aware, different services we do RFPs at different times for. And it just seemed like a good time to do an RFP and see what else. What other vendors are out in the marketplace and make sure that, you know, we're receiving the best value for the service that we're getting. So with that, we would like to issue an RFP for death notification services.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by David, seconded by Scott. Yes, Jerry?
Just a quick question. I think I heard a reference in that lengthy presentation about several companies that they are aware of that are in this business. They didn't sound like they were too excited about any of them, but I guess maybe we might check with them and find out whether or not they have someone that they could refer us to as well to see if they're on the RFP list or could be.
Are you talking about for death notification services? Or are you talking about?
Sagitech made a reference to the fact that there were three or four companies in this business that they deal with and have.
Right. So yeah.
Maybe there's somebody that we might be interested in. I don't know.
Gotcha. Okay.
Gail can make that phone call. any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Gordon.
Aye.
Holcomb.
Aye.
Kroll.
Aye.
MacDonald.
Aye.
Smithy. Aye. Kwan.
Aye.
And Powell.
Aye.
Motion passes. On to item 13, consider and take possible action on the SACRS Board of Directors election. In our packet was a letter from Dan McAllister of the nominating committee and with a recommendation of Gray for president, Kavnis for vice president, Hagen for treasurer, Garcia for secretary, our very own David McDonald for regular member, and Veer Williams for regular member. Anyone have any objections to that slate?
So, David, are we good with that? You're good with that, all right?
Yeah, I'm glad to see Veer finally, because he's thrown his hat in the ring a couple times in the past. So he's a very detailed trustee. I went to Wharton and Pepperdine with him, and he's a pretty bright and dedicated guy. So I'm happy to see him get that. So is there a motion to accept the nominating committee and direct our
second?
Okay, moved and second, and direct our voting member to vote as such. So moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Gordon?
Aye.
Holcomb?
Aye.
Kroll?
Aye.
MacDonald?
Aye.
Smithy? Aye. Kwan?
Aye.
And Powell?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. And after a long day, on to item 14. 14A is staff reports. Is Tim Price on the line, or did we lose him after that?
He's there, and we're moving him over so he can talk to you.
Somebody's waking him up.
Tim, Welcome. We're at staff comments, staff reports. And you're muted.
There we go. Thank you for sticking with me here over the course of the day. Quick update for the trustees on a organizational change at Pureford, one of our international equity managers. We had an announcement on Monday that their parent company, the Bank of Montreal, is selling all its European, Middle East, and Africa asset management businesses to Ameriprise. So it's very early days on this announcement. What we've been assured is that the Pureford team is going to remain together, but there's no details on compensation packages or retention packages at this point. The other area of concern for us is we're actually invested in a BMO commingled fund with Pureford as a sub-advisor. So there's some question as to how those things transfer. So more questions than answers at this point, but this is something we expect to be back in front of the board with, either in terms of there's been a satisfactory resolution or we may need to make some adjustments here. But just to give a heads up to the trustees at this point.
Thank you, Tim. Anyone have any questions for Tim? Doesn't look like it. Thanks, Tim. And Gail.
Yes, I just wanted to mention with the board chair announcing his retirement at the last board meeting, I just wanted to congratulate him on his retirement and let him know that Sisera staff is here to support him through this retirement process, as we do all of our members. I also wanted to thank you for your support of Sisera and your service on the board over these last number of years. Very much appreciated. So I wanted to comment on that.
Thank you, Gail. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we do not have any outside professionals report. So on to trustee comments.
I'd like to, this is in all seriousness, Gail, I think you have to be aware and somehow alert vendors when they're making presentations that that is about the quickest way to talk themselves out of a sale. They're enthusiastic about the product. I get it, but they need to know their audience. In all the years I did public speaking, it was the key thing I told myself and other people's, know your audience. And they were presenting a presentation that should be to end users, and that's fine. And he knows his stuff. He clearly knows his stuff. The product is attractive, but that presentation was deadly, just deadly. And somebody's got to alert them what the group, what the nature of the group is, and maybe make a separate presentation for Dave. So he can get all the details. I'm sorry, that was overwhelming.
We're giving him a time limit.
I liked it, Gail. I thought he was good.
Well, he clearly knows his stuff, but holy mackerel. That's just, it's not effective. Not when it drones on that long.
I just wanted to have 1/10 of his energy. I would feel much better about my stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I've never met anyone that breathes through their gills like that. Because he never took in a breath, you know, the entire time. So I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, I think he has gills. In music, there's a thing called circular breathing.
Circular breathing.
Blowing your trumpet without taking a deep breath. Yeah.
And a buddy of mine showed me how that worked, yes.
Yeah. There are too many punchlines to that. I won't use any of them.
He was a trumpet player, Jerry.
I got it. Okay. But I was beginning to feel like maybe David and Bjorn should set up a date or a dinner or something, you know, because they both look very lonely to me. And I think David needs a friend.
It's a tough room.
Always has been.
All right. Well, I'm going to go next. I'm going to ask Gail for a little assistance, but you know, it's been a long day for everybody, but I do want to take time to recognize you, Todd. It's been a wonderful run. And you've had an extraordinary run of serving as chair for 4 consecutive years. Fabulous job, chaired through the pandemic, learned how to use GoToMeeting, Zoom, and whatever else we've been doing. I mean, it's
right.
Not what I'm sure you didn't think you signed up for it. But I just want to tell you on behalf of everybody that's here today, as well as those who aren't, it's been much appreciated. And it, you know, as a testament to your wonderful job, we did get a parting gift for you. I talked to Don Pardo. We've got the home version of the pension board, No, just kidding. as you see on the screen, thank you, Gail, for sharing. This is a commemorative gavel being presented to you in honor of your outstanding leadership as board chair, and it recognizes the four-year period from 2017 to 21. So on behalf of all of us, thank you very much for everything you've done. I wish you well in retirement. You're too damn young to be doing that, but I do wish you well. So Godspeed, and take this gift with all of our good wishes, all of the staff. Gail collaborated on this, of course, with us. And so we are delighted to present you with at least some memento you can keep around to remind you of kind of what you used to do.
Anyway, the nice thing about that too is there is also a virtual sheet cake. there's a little knock at your door. That virtual sheet cake is being brought in by virtual staff members right now. So enjoy every slice, because it's going to be really virtually good.
And we're having a virtual champagne toast for you.
I did set Tom a note, no less. Yes, yeah. Style champagne virtual, that is.
Tom, we were going to do a standing ovation for you, but we figured the video wouldn't really be appropriate.
Oh, I think the good news about this is three of us are not wearing pants at this moment. So we'll skip the standing O.
Well, thank you so much. That, you know, I swung by the office yesterday, and Christina was nice enough to have it there for me. Yep. and everything. So that was a very, very sweet gesture. I appreciate all those involved, and the sentiment behind it means a lot. So I guess I should give it. Obviously, I'll say something. If anyone else, are there any other trustee comments before I dive?
I did share comments in writing with Todd, but I'd like to at least echo that I very much enjoyed working with him. I always found him to be a knowledgeable, well-prepared, and passionate member of the CICERA board, and I appreciated all those qualities. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
I've got some notes, Todd, from Bjorn here to read, but I'll pass on those.
Boy, we'll have to. Sorry,
we only have an hour left. There's not time.
Forget about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and blood clots. If we don't move around soon, we're all in danger.
Yes. So, there you go. All right. The floor is yours.
Okay. Well, when I picked this up yesterday, Christina and I talked for a little bit, and I've been actually coming to these meetings for 12 years now. When I promoted to an accountant, it was in the spring of 2009, so we were kind of at the bottom of the depths of the stock market. It was right when we're going through depooling, which most of you know disproportionately affected Central San, as certain staff were telling them, but they were certain that safety was, we were subsidizing safety. But anyway, so I sat through 5 years of meetings and never really gave it much thought of running for the board. I guess partly in the fact that the two general seats have been held for a long time by the same two people, but when I heard that Richard was retiring, I'm not one who runs for boards and wants to be the head of committees or anything. I'm a worker bee. I'm happy if you just bury me in work and leave me to my own devices. But I really thought about it, and I thought, this is actually something where I think I could add value based on my background and, my interests, as a frustrated wannabe actuary, because what little kid didn't want to be an actuary? But all us math majors did. So unless you wanted to be a teacher or something. So anyway, so it just combined all my interests, and I'd already had good experiences as being a person in the crowd. I knew that, staff was extremely friendly and everything. So I thought, what the heck? The worst that can happen is the members say no, and no harm, no foul. But I'm so glad they said yes, because this has been one of the highlights of my career. These 7 years on this board have been incredible. Especially in those early years, I was on the losing end of a lot of 5-4 votes that reminded me I'm not quite as persuasive as I thought I was. But that's okay. That's why we have these diverse boards and everything. And what I did appreciate is just the civility of us when we were having these 5-4 votes. I mean, I think one could, take things personally and everything, but I rarely saw it get personal. And I think that's just a tremendous tribute to the people I served with, my fellow trustees. You guys have been great. We've had great debates. I've learned from your guys' comments and questions and everything. I hope a few times it was reciprocated, but I don't really want to mention anyone by name, because then if I leave someone out, I'm going to feel terrible, or if I didn't give them their due. But I can't say enough good things about Cicera's staff. They have been fantastic. The presentations that were given, the support that I've received, and I can only assume you guys have as well, has been outstanding. And like I said, this is a highlight that I won't forget. So thank you. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to staff. Thank you to my fellow trustees. And I've really enjoyed my time. And this is probably one of the few things I'm really going to miss is being on this board, but it's been an honor to serve, and I appreciate having the opportunity. So I'll miss you guys, but hopefully we'll run into each other time to time. And I told Christina, maybe if Paul's in the room, I'll come in, just because, he entertains me and everything. I know. Yeah. I'm a sicko, but that's just how my mind's wired. So thank you all. Thank you for this plaque, and thank you for all the good times and memories.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Bravo. Enjoy your retirement, my friend.
Thank you. I will. And best of luck to all of you in the future. So unless there's any other trustee
comment. Listen, if you get lonely, I can get you Bjorn's cell phone number.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Well, that's when I get committed into a facility, is when I say, yeah, I'll take, I shouldn't say that. This is a public, he was a very passionate man, and he knows his stuff. And I think we're in good hands in terms of he knows his product. So I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. And plus, he and David are going to be best friends, so I don't want to be a third wheel. All right.
Well, we're going to adjourn in your honor, not your memory, but we're going to adjourn in your honor today, Todd. So Godspeed.
I second that.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
All right, Todd. Be well.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Make sure my pension's there. I need
Thanks
it.
Thanks, all. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks all
for today and for all the other days.